Are listening to Ayahuasca Talks, and I am your host, Rebecca Hayden. For those of you who are interested in self-discovery and healing through hypnosis, please email me at rebecca.hayden@gmail.com to book a free consultation.
Welcome to another edition of Ayahuasca Talks. Today, I have Lori Strollen with me. She's a social worker and a psychedelic psychotherapist. She is the co-founder of Voice for Hope, Healers of Planet Earth, with a focus on deep engagement and reciprocity toward Indigenous wisdoms and plant medicine lineages. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, Rebecca. So happy to be with you.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. And I know it hasn't been easy, but here we are. So let's get started. So the question I often ask guests is, where were you at when you first started to think about doing plant medicines or psychedelics? Where were you at in your life? What took you to that place where you were ready?
I was at the end of the pandemic in a very, very dark place with a convergence of very challenging life events, deaths and breakups and alienation from family, and just a whole bunch of things converged all at once. And really, really wanting to be done with this thing we call life. Just wasn't finding any joy or meaning in it. And I did the only thing that I knew how to do that has helped me in the past. You know, I was doing 4 hours a day of yoga and meditation and self-care, but none of it was enough to keep the words, "I just want to die," out of my head 24/7. It went on for like a year. And finally, I came down to Mexico, really with the intent that I'm probably going to end my life down here. And I reached out to a shaman. He wouldn't call himself a shaman. An ayahuasquero, complete and total stranger. I hadn't researched ayahuasca at all, but I was at such wit's end that I was ready to try anything. And I thought, okay, well, this is the magic that Mexico has for me this trip. Then let's try it. And he scooped me up and took me out to the jungle with two other curanderos, and the three of them gave me this beautiful private ceremony around a fire, singing and drumming and playing guitar for me. And that night I drank three cups of ayahuasca. The first one I really didn't feel anything, and the second one the trees came alive and started to sort of commune with me and breathe with me and giggle with me and get playful. And I thought, oh, this is lovely. This is sweet. I saw all these neon lights in the trees, and I kind of looked, it didn't last very long, maybe 20 minutes. And I looked at the shaman, at my friend Orlando, who's now a friend, and said, is that it? Like, I don't know. Should I take more? I really wanted a cure. I wanted a fix. I wanted to feel better. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I don't know. How badly do you want to know yourself? And that's not a thing you should ever say to a psychotherapist. I mean, it's like playing chicken, right? So I took the third cup, and it was late in the night, and the other two had gone to bed, and Orlando was sort of sleeping. The fire was kind of dying, and the third cup kicked in with really intense purging, and everything that was a few moments ago having me just feeling so blessed, and there was so much beauty and love in the second cup and the beginning of the ceremony. And all of a sudden, everything went dark, like macabre dark. And all the beauty of the facility around me that we were in, the macrame turned to cobwebs, and the trees had skulls in them instead of cute little neon beings chatting and giggling with me. It was just really intense. And this feeling of, oh, here it is again, you're all alone when, you know, the shit hits the fan and nobody's gonna help you, you've got to deal with it yourself. And along with that was this bodily sensation of like, power up, there's no way out but through it, so just like brace yourself, this is gonna be like childbirth, right? Like, here we go. And along with that came this knowledge that like nothing had changed except my perspective, right? Mm-hmm. The place was still the place. The people were still beautiful and compassionate and loving and giving me this incredible gift of healing. And all that had changed was my perspective and my feeling of loneliness, right? Of I'm in this all alone, when really I wasn't. And what it ignited for me, it plugged me in. The outcome of that was to just feel so connected and so alive, and every cell of my body feeling nourished and enlivened by Mother Nature and by other humans for the first time in years. It was really profound. And as a social worker and a clinician, my heart was like, what are we doing to people in the West? Why are we giving them these medicines that cause them to feel numb and zombie-like and disconnected just to stay stable and functioning when this is possible, when feeling like this is possible?
Right.
And it changed the course of my life entirely. I wound up going home and getting enrolled in psychedelic psychotherapy trainings and ketamine therapy, getting trained and, you know, starting to work with other plant medicines a little bit here and there and really study. And now I live in Mexico in a house in the jungle that has trees running through it. So completely different. Half the year, that's where I am. So
yeah, I love the jungle. And yeah, so after that, you connected with me.
Yes, thank goodness. Because I didn't know what I had gotten into at all.
It's a very big thing, but it's good that you mentioned that you purge. So I think that when we do purge, that often alleviates some of what we went into it with, but then we come back to our challenges, right? So you were still exploring it at the time, and we did some journeys together, hypnotic journeys, and you reconnected with one particular tree from your childhood, and it showed up. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you brought me into a journey that awakened this childhood part of myself that I'd completely forgotten about. Like, she had just disappeared. And I, all of a sudden, it came back to life. And I remembered that as a child, I was a swamp girl. I spent all my time leaning against this tree in the middle of the moss, listening to peepers, playing with frogs, climbing trees, going into trees and playing under the willow tree, bringing my journal and feeling held and rocked in trees when I was sad, just crying. And that became really alive for me and so sustaining during the integration period after this journey, you know?
Yeah, and you were able to actually even dialogue with it, which is interesting because it showed up for you in that way. So that you could continue what started with ayahuasca. And I know these concepts are very strange sounding for people who haven't been involved in these medicines, but they certainly do open you up to seeing nature differently, having a different relationship with it, a better one, and opening up to all kinds of things that may sound like fantasy or fairy tales. But it's interesting, I think, how you had that relationship going all along. And then it just kind of came to life through ayahuasca and you having that experience of that support of them, and then showing up in your hypnotic journey as well as being a support for you and showing you that it always has been, you know, it has been there from a very young age. And you were able to explore that and start to allow that to support you.
It's actually become a really beautiful tool in my clinical practice. One of the things I say to my clients often these days is, we humans just need to be more tree. And they look at me funny, you know, like, what are you doing, Lori? What? And I say, look, you know, these trees stand next to each other in the forest or the jungle, and they don't look at each other and compare. They don't look at one tree and say, oh, you don't belong here, or you're too skinny, or you're too thick, or you're not rich enough, or you're too poor. Trees just stand there and look like they're doing nothing, when in fact, they're cleaning our air and they're providing homes for all the critters and shelter and shade for us and keeping the earth underneath them from crumbling and providing fuel and homes for us. And they ask nothing in return. It's so beautiful. And I just think we humans need to be more tree.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. I'm so glad you shared that. Yeah. And as it turns out, there's also a spiritual element that you have a special relationship with showed up for you and start to have a dialogue with it, which was interesting. We do take a lot for granted, and with the medicines, they help us start to see things differently and open up to the magic that's all around us that we have been taking for granted for far too long. And then on top of that, introducing more magic, you know, it really is a great gift. You had mentioned something about, I don't know if it was in previous discussions or just earlier, but about being the person that people come to. And this was difficult during what we've just been through over the last few years, right? There's been a major crisis of on so many levels, right? Families have had difficult times keeping it together, and their relationships have been strained through this, differing opinions and all kinds of things, being separated in holidays and all kinds of things. And you know, there's the financial aspect. There were so many things that were challenging all of us. And for those of us who generally hold space for other people, who that's our role in life, it took a few years to get to the point where I realized, wow, I don't have anybody that's doing that for me, you know? And that was an invitation for me to start to seek that, to start to change that situation and acknowledge it. And I feel good that it happened, even though at the time it didn't feel so great because it kind of brought me to my own crisis. But that's sometimes the invitation. And I think your crisis was your invitation and your introduction to plant med. It was your baptism. You know, he even talked about that rebirth thing, that that's something many of us feel that we go through.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was kind of shocked and devastated when I was just, my mental health was doing so poorly after all of these things at the end of the pandemic and holding space for so many people and going through deaths and breakups and knocking on the doors of the people that profess to love me the most and saying, guys, I need help. Sisters, my son, I need help. I'm not doing okay. I need some positive inputs. I need some love and support. I need someone to hold space for me. And what I found was they just did not have the capacity to do that. And there was, in fact, anger that I would dare break the contract of, I'm the one that's supposed to be strong, and I'm the one that's supposed to listen, and I'm the one that's supposed to be there. And there was a lot of pushback, and that I just didn't have the resources at the time to process or manage very well, which is what really drove me down to Mexico and to sort of break out of, like, okay, all contracts canceled. All contracts canceled. I've got to go take care of myself now and nobody else. And to really reevaluate, how do I function in this world in a way that's sustainable for my soul and my well-being? And really what I learned was I didn't even know how to love myself. I didn't know I had the right to love myself. I had bought into a family culture that believed that Lori is bad. And, you know, that was just the given rule that everybody lived by. And I accepted it for the most part in my family. And I bought it hook, line, and sinker on a level that thankfully plant medicines have shown me and I'm still working to break through. But yeah, it was hugely transformative. And the juxtaposition of being welcomed in a culture where I am a complete and total stranger from a foreign land and being loved and nurtured back to life was profound.
Yes. Well, I mean, the family's there to challenge us too in certain ways, for sure. I think we learn most of our lessons that way. And ideas that we have about ourselves are being reflected in those relationships as well. So that's why the focus changes with plant medicines to be all on ourselves, and that we have to give ourselves what we're trying to get from other people too, right? And then hopefully we can cultivate healthier relationships coming from that different place, coming from that self-loving place.
It's been really liberating and sweet and painful and difficult, all of it, right?
Yeah. You know, not only did the trees show up for you, in one of the journeys that we did together, your dad showed up for you, right? And he's passed, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He died when I was 28. long time ago, 30 years, almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
And I don't know if this was in a journey or in a dream, but he said to you, don't give away your gold. A beautiful thing. And he used to tell you that, right?
He did. When he was alive, he would say that a lot. And my response to him was always sort of like, oh, Dad, come on. Like, we have to share, right? I mean, if you have gold, you know, what's the point of keeping it and hoarding it all to yourself? Of course you should share your gold. And I never really understood it until that journey. And, you know, until my involvement with plant medicines, which helped me to see that I was giving it away to the point where not, I just wasn't taking good care of myself. I wasn't loving myself. I wasn't gold to myself.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was timely.
Absolutely.
And one of the journeys we did where you got to take a look at those ideas that you had about yourself, I remember you mentioning that that was very transformative too, that you got to see those ideas that you had accepted about yourself and change them and confront that and start to, you know, no longer identify with it.
Yeah, that was an amazing journey that you took me on, with these jars where, you know, the things that I had bought into around my family culture and these ancestral traumas that have been passed down through the maternal lineage in my family. And I was really able to see them clearly and see that they aren't true and they're not serving me, and just replace them with better beliefs.
And I think that once we do see these things that we do know deep down inside of us, that's why those journeys work. That's why ayahuasca can produce the things that it does within us, because it's there. Once we're able to see it, it kind of takes the power away from it. So we no longer give it power because we see it, it's revealed to us, and it can't fool us anymore so much as it did before.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had a discussion also about being a therapist or being a person who holds space for others, and also having reluctance to admit it when we need help. I mean, there's the holding space for other people and then us needing to admit that we need help too. And then there's also admitting that, you know, we're still learning. And for me, I know I'll be learning for the rest of my life. And I had to get comfortable with that. And that was a process too. You know, there was this side of me that, and I'm sure a lot of other people in our position, you know, maybe go through this where you feel like, you know, you shouldn't have any more challenges because you're helping others with theirs. But I don't think that that's realistic or true. I think that the more that we work on ourselves, the better we're able to hold space for other people. It's a responsibility. It's part of self-love. But I did struggle with that. And I think we had a really good discussion about that, because I think that was something that you were struggling with and many other people, I'm sure. That we have to give ourselves permission to still go through our lives where with challenges that we're going to face and admit that it's fine, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This notion in our culture that emotion is weakness, that vulnerability is weakness, is, it just has to be transformed. It's so toxic. It's, our emotions are what make us human. It's what we're here to do, is to feel, to express, right? To create out of our emotions. And I think it's part of, I have a colleague that doesn't refer to the patriarchy, he refers to the patricide, which I really like. And, you know, these outdated ideas of like relegate all things dark, emotional, weak as feminine and oppress them and banish them. And, you know, they're not what is important in society. And, you know, I see plant medicines having a really important role in helping to transform that. And it makes me very hopeful. I see myself as someone who's always been okay with, you know, I've always been seen as super strong, but I've also been really authentic in a way that sometimes is probably a little too in your face for some people, perhaps. But, Yeah, still struggling with. I remember being a yoga teacher and I loved iced coffee. And I had this idea that yoga teachers shouldn't drink iced coffee. So I'd be like hiding my 32-ounce Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee in my jacket pocket as I'm walking to class, hoping none of my students would see me drinking this iced coffee, you know? And it feels the same way thinking about, you know, publicly on the internet talking about, as a therapist, having been through a suicidal period in my life. But I think the truth is, we help give others permission to be honest and authentic and reach for the help they need instead of suffer in silence, which I think
Absolutely.
too many people in our society are doing, especially there's a suicide pandemic right now, epidemic. The rates are just ridiculously skyrocketing, and there's not a lot of people talking about it or doing anything about it. And you know, as we know, suffering in silence when you're feeling suicidal is the absolute worst thing you can do. And if we can find a way to see vulnerability as strength and emotion and the ability to express emotion as strength, we can find compassion and healing.
Absolutely. I do think that, medicines are introducing us to new ways of being. And so that old way of being, the masculine dominant way, and it wasn't healthy masculine. The divine masculine is very different than what we've been experiencing. And that's something that I think we see coming into its own now.
I agree with you 100%. It makes me so joyful and hopeful the amount of calls that I get in my practice and new clients that I'm seeing in my practice that are men coming and saying, I realize I don't even know how to identify my emotions, much less work with them, accept them, talk about them with someone else, and I need help. Men coming to me and saying, you know, being open about childhood sexual abuse for the first time in their lives and wanting to heal that. Just so much more opening into healthy masculinity. It's beautiful. It's so hopeful. And I do see the plant medicines having a large role in ushering that in so many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, we do see there's both realities going on now. We're feeling the effects of the last few years and the devastating effects of it, but we're also seeing opportunities and the invitation, as we talked about, even though we might not like the way we're invited, but there's always an invitation there to do things very differently. And there's a lot of people choosing that. And I find that with my clients too. Both men and women starting to open up to that and really being open to all kinds of things because of the invitation, because they know that the way things are going now or just going about life the same way is not working anymore.
This liberation from those old ways and this expansion into wholeness, right?
Yeah. This is a great gift, and we see it in hindsight more easily, but I think that we are starting to see this for sure. And when we do go through big changes, whatever was in place before has to kind of break down, right? In fact, that's the invitation to us breaking down, the old us breaking down. The old us is not working anymore. So when we see this happening globally, all these problems, it's like the old ways are breaking down. And what's emerging is something very different. And it will feel different. Of course it will. And these are the things that we go through when we're faced with the invitations that continue to come up, right? So the next challenge comes up and you're feeling uncomfortable about something and you delve into it saying, okay, when you make that time for yourself, what is this really about? And you discover the next thing, the next invitation to heal, right? The next thing that's ready.
All these layers,
Oh, yes, multi-layered thing. So, another thing that came up for you, and this is something that I believe so many of us, if not all of us, have to deal with, and that ayahuasca is very good at helping us deal with, is our thoughts, our thought patterns. Not only the negative ideas about ourselves, because we have discussed that, but the negative ideas about others and the
Oh,
judgment.
the judgments.
Right?
Ayahuasca is always showing me the ways that I armor up against my fears, my insecurities, and then my mind kicks in with all of this garbage, judging this, judging that, you know, in order to pretend like it has some semblance of control. And I giggle about it now because it's a deep practice that I'm in. My most recent ayahuasca journey, like, the darkness came, as it always does when I do ayahuasca. And I found myself going into that armored up judgmental place. Why the heck am I even doing this? This is disgusting. The whole place smells like vomit. There's not enough toilet paper in the bathroom. I'm never doing this again. Are these people charlatans or are they evil? Why is everything so dark now? Maybe they're like black magic. All the thoughts, right? All the thoughts. And I came out of the bathroom thinking all these thoughts. And the next thing you know, I see smoke all around my head. And there's no smoke anywhere near me. So I'm like, wow, this is weird. I've never experienced this before. And the next thing I knew, I was on the ground. So Mama Aya felled me like a tree because she couldn't get me to stop judging any other way.
She gave you a break from it.
She gave me a break from it. Yeah. She was like, I'm going to steal your consciousness and give you a moment of just feeling what not judging is. And I have to giggle because that was kind of what it took. It was quite funny.
Anyway. Yeah. I had that experience too. I didn't get knocked down. Not that time, not in that way, but I went through a whole deep process of my thoughts and then taking it away and helping me feel what it feels like to not have those kinds of thoughts. And then of course, reintroducing them so that I can be the one to work on it. And it's been a long road. I've made some wonderful gains, but it's a long project, let's put it that way. It doesn't have as much traction with me as it did before, and I'm so grateful for that. It's like not long after those thoughts arrive, and now I go, oh yeah, okay. There's a whole feeling that goes along with that.
Yeah, and the brain has its habitual coping mechanisms and pathways, right? And
yes,
as you sort of be more mindful of the brain doing what the brain does, you realize I have a choice. Like, my thoughts are one of the very few things that I do have a choice over. And that's what she keeps showing me time and time again. You know, after I came to consciousness and rejoined the Moloka and, you know, everyone was singing and it was beautiful again, I realized I have a choice. I can like sit here guarded up and tense in the moment before when it was all dark and I was all judgy, or I can listen and realize that there's beautiful singing going on around this beautiful campfire, and it's a gift, and I can choose to participate in it and see it as beautiful and joyful and something I want to be a part of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And learning to live my life that way is a discipline and a practice and a process. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I would call it at times, you know, we experience it differently at different times in our lives, right? But there are times when it's definitely a discipline, and there are other times it's a gift, and it's what you experience and everything in between, right?
Yeah.
For sure. So one thing that we did together, we did another hypnotic journey where we discovered, because you do know this stuff, it's all in there to be discovered. And through this journey, you discovered what the beliefs and agreements were behind this. Because we have these beliefs and agreements we're not even aware of that are supporting this behavior and these thought patterns. They're supported by us, sometimes even unwittingly, but it's there. Because we believe there's some benefit. We believe it's doing something for us, right? So you had this journey where you looked at that. And once you got to see what was behind it and change it, and I'm sure that it's not that different than so many of us where you believed that somehow doing this would take the focus off of your wrongdoings or your own deficits, right? And that somehow by doing this, you were avoiding that, and that was a good mechanism to avoid that. And then the focus is all on whoever's doing whatever wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's all to cover up the fact that you're judging yourself too, right? And that's mostly the case with all of us. And that's what we have to come to understand. And when we do that, we go, okay, it's all the same thing, really. And that's what they mean when they say, when you treat others badly, you're doing it to yourself too.
The othering, right? When we feel fear or insecurity, or we don't understand someone, we can't relate. We make them something less than human. You know, different than me, other than me. You are not me. I am not you, because I can't understand or connect to you.
Right. Wars are fought this way. For
yeah,
every
exactly.
war there's been a name for the opposite counterpart. The soldiers on the other side, they were not called by any name that they had been before. They made up a new name for them so that they could regard them as less than human and do what they're meant to do in those circumstances. So when you hear that happening, when you hear people being encouraged to call a whole group of people something other, you know, something new, a new name to describe a whole bunch of individuals that have all kinds of, you know, thoughts and feelings and histories of their own by one name, that's war talk. And anyway, it's very much like what we go through in our own minds. It's a little war in our minds, you know, against ourselves and against others.
And as we do the work and plant medicines show us the way and people start to wake up, you know, there's more and more compassion, and we recognize the beauty in our diversity and the similarity in our difference and how much we need each other, right?
Yes. And the more and more we work with this medicine and the more and more we discover ourselves and explore this stuff and work on ourselves, we realize how it's not as important to be so concerned with what everybody else thinks. You know, what we think is really important, and thinking about what other people think, well, that's not really a quality thought, is it? It's not a quality way to create a good atmosphere in our mind. And that's something that we really need to be caretakers of. The medicine shows us this over and over again. And even when we delve within, we see this, where it's always about this, about the atmosphere that we create inside of ourselves. And I think
the
that's
self-love, the self-love, the way that plant medicines encourage us to love ourselves, then makes it possible for us to love our neighbor, right? Or love the person who's harming us, or love the lesson that we're learning from that person.
Or be okay no matter what, because we've got consistent, wonderful inner atmosphere that's supporting us through all of it, right? And the real magic comes when you achieve these things for long periods of time. You see the magic that happens around you. It's very surprising how different people respond to you when you're in that better, more loving state. It's really amazing. So I wanted you to talk about a little bit about the project that you're doing and the wisdom that's coming out of it, the project where you're engaging the elders and indigenous wisdom keepers and having those discussions. I'd love to hear about that.
Oh, thank you. So in 2010, I co-founded a nonprofit called Voice for Hope, Healers of Planet Earth. And back then, our mission was to bring alternative and complementary wellness practitioners and clients together, and to educate legislators about the importance and the need and the function of these different modalities as important to healthcare and legitimate medicine, and the importance of choice. And then during the pandemic, things kind of, you know, petered out. We stopped all activity, and the board was thinking about just kind of calling it quits, and something in me said, no, don't call it quits yet. And the next month later was the MAPS conference, where a group of indigenous people kind of stormed the stage on Rick Doblin's final speech. And they gave the most inspiring talk about the appropriation and colonialization that's happening, about to happen in psychedelic medicine. And basically that really inspired me. You know, they said, look, folks, you messed it up with tobacco and you have a cancer epidemic. You messed it up with coca and there was all kinds of addictions and problems. You messed it up with the opiates and you still haven't figured that out. And now you're taking our power plants, our most spiritual, most sacred, and you know nothing about them, and you're not inviting us to the table to teach you, to educate you, to partner with you. You're not doing it in a way that is respectful of how the sustainability of these medicines that are, you know, pivotal to our cultures. And it's wrong. And like, you know, what are we doing? What are you doing? And at that moment, I realized, oh, Voice for Hope is supposed to assist with this. And I just kind of filed it away. And I think the next month, I was bringing Bernardina Sabina down to Mexico, where I stay in the winters, for a ceremony. And in that ceremony, the mushrooms began to cheerlead me and show me exactly this project and unfold the whole thing before my eyes. And so we've created a new focus for Voice for Hope, which is plant medicines and Indigenous elders' wisdoms, lineage-bearing elders, and we're video recording to preserve these wisdoms. Some of the elders, like Bernardino Sabina, who's of the Maria Sabina lineage in psilocybin, and Tata Juvenal, who's of the Chichimeca tribe, and the peyote and ayahuasca tradition, the four medicine ceremony tradition, were negotiating some Shipibo elders, some filming there. So trying to protect these lineages and the wisdoms and make them accessible to people in the West, particularly the clinical psychedelic training programs, and also to create a river of reciprocity flowing back to these communities and to legitimize them, to hold them as the authorities that they are in this space, and hopefully begin to collaborate with them on research and grant funding and different ways of collaborative and respectful working together in this arena.
That's
so
beautiful.
That's the project. Yeah.
That's
thank
really
you.
Important. And I remember hearing about that at the conference, and I think I may have even seen a clip. It's been a while now. But I'm hoping that there can be inroads made. I mean, I'm wondering if there's an opportunity now to open a dialogue again with someone, with an organization like MAPS that's so huge in this space. And being that big comes with that responsibility as well. And perhaps there's an opportunity there now. I'm not really sure, but I would like to hope that there is, because I think that there are just endless possibilities of that kind of relationship to develop and see what can come out of that. I don't think it's going to take away from anything. I think it's going to add a great deal. And it will change some things for the better. So we discussed before how it was interesting to watch the feeding frenzy of this new treatment, right? People started to, you know, do all these studies so that they could get all this funding and then just throw these clinics together without any consideration for the gravity of the situation, of the fact that you cannot treat this like any other product. It's not like anything. But there wasn't this careful approach. It was like, let's, you know, do it. But all this stuff, right? It's like you're watching it take place going, okay, that'll be interesting, you know, to see what happens there. And so many implode, right?
Right. As you watch, I mean, that's what makes me so hopeful, right? Like this greedy land grab approach in like big pharma, we're going to, you know, isolate the molecule and sell it as a drug and make a fortune in the psychedelic space. Everyone who rushed in with that attitude kind of imploded, didn't they? And I think that the plant medicines, because they are spiritual entities, because they are conscious beings, and we need to respect them that way, they're not going to allow for it. That's what I learned from watching those beginning, you know, efforts. And it really brings to my mind the importance of, and I don't see it happening right now so far in some of the big organizations, unfortunately. MAPS has done beautiful work, but in terms of honoring the spiritual science, the indigenous science, you know, we call indigenous ways, we don't call it science, but they have a science. It's very clear, and it's not much different than the science that we endorse. It's just got different language, and they measure things, and their protocols aren't measurable. They're not what we can see, touch, and feel or measure. They're, it's, you know, connection to nature, connection to the elements, connection to the divine. But there is science to this, and there's thousands of years of it that needs to be honored and respected. And I think what plant medicines are really ushering in and a return of is this quality of sacredness in the clinical sphere, which has been lacking and so needed for people to really have wellness and wholeness.
But people are learning through their mistakes, hopefully. I mean, it's interesting how you mentioned, and I didn't remember, you know, what was said there, but you'd mentioned the mistakes made with previous substances. And, you know, this is our opportunity to learn through the mistakes, right? To say, let's do it differently this time. And I think the implosion of a lot of them that rushed to the market with this was, you know, the fact that they didn't consider it. And also that people that went in vulnerable and had these big experiences realized, oh, wow, this is a big thing and it can't be handled in the same way that we do everything else.
Yeah.
It is teaching us, this experience is teaching us to do everything very differently. And I hope we become more and more grateful for that and end up building and showing, demonstrating that respect and that appreciation for what this is and what an opportunity is, what a gift it is, and start to learn the lessons it's teaching us. It's teaching us about love and respect. And if we don't reflect that in what we do, it's not going to work out well. And you can call it a win if you make lots of money doing those things in a very business-like way that has no heart and no consideration for the depth and expansion that happens with these experiences. But ultimately, down the line, people will end up doing better when there is that respect and when there is that love. And that teaching is going to come anyway, because it's the way that we heal. And when we come to grips with that, boy, we're going to just skyrocket forward, really.
Yeah. I am so humbled and have such reverence for the fact that there are any Indigenous elders even willing to share with us, especially in America and Canada too, right? Given the travesties in our history together that we've committed against them. And yet, you know, this prophecy says when the white man comes and asks for our medicine, we will know that the earth is going to heal now, that a new era is dawning. And this is what we've been waiting for and living for and loving for. And it seems like such a risk to take. And I just am in reverence of it, honestly.
And it's something to celebrate. It is the turning of things. Things are changing very fundamentally, you know, not just the surface stuff. There's so many changes that we see happening that's it's a very surface. There's something introduced as something new, and it's just the same old stuff dressed up as something new. This is a fundamental change at a level that is so deep within us that everything that we create and do moving forward, when we change in this way, it will be obvious. It will be very different. They're even talking about our vibrations changing everything. It is fundamental, this stuff. And not everybody will choose to, but I think the opportunity is there. And the Indigenous elders that are available and they're ready to work with anybody who chooses to take that opportunity, I think is a wondrous thing. And they have done their work, right? They have learned the lessons through the medicine. So they are willing to open up a respectful, loving dialogue. They know that this is what we need in this world. And that's what they're here to bring. That's why they're here now. And we're here now for a reason too.
I had a beautiful conversation with Bernardina Sabina about Niños Santos being a really strong force in ushering back in the importance of the divine feminine. And that, you know, the mushrooms are this collaborative energy of healing, and they live in the deep, dark, dank of the soil. And that's where they thrive and do their work and work their magic, all this healing. And the lineage of Maria Sabina, born on Mary Magdalene's birthday. And I mean, I could go on and on about it. It was a conversation that really excited me, but I think a lot about that. And I think that all of the plant medicines, because they come from Mama Gaia, from Mother Nature, they're holding the feminine qualities, the archetypal feminine qualities of not competition, but collaboration. just much more ability to hold the complexities and work together through them and guide us in ways that are nurturing and loving and not the old greedy colonial patricide ways, but ways that are much more expansive for humanity and healing for humanity. To me, that's super hopeful.
Absolutely. And we are learning, and you can see it happening. Even the wellness in the workplace, they're starting to realize, hey, this can contribute to either to people's ill health or wellness, the atmosphere within the workplace. And eventually they're going to get to a place where they realize that they have to change themselves if they want to change the atmosphere within themselves and then the atmosphere they create for others and with others. And yes, collaboration, you know, this has been a competitive, our whole economy is based on competition. Yeah. And I understand it logically, but I don't think that that's all there is to it. I think we took that to such an extreme and that it started to impact how we socialize with one another, and the collaborative opportunities can go to such a degree where, as you said, influenced by these plants that have that natural intelligence and create symbiosis, which is even better. That's where we get eventually, where we have, there's this knowing and we work together naturally and we respond to one another naturally in ways that always benefit everybody. And this is what the trees are doing. This is how you described, you know.
Exactly. It's exactly where my mind was going. Back to be more tree, right? We stand next to each other and we realize, oh, that tree over there isn't getting enough sunlight. We need to send it some nutrients. That tree over there hasn't had enough water. We need to send it some hydration. When humans can live like this is the planet I want to live on. Please.
And this is where we're headed. And this is what the mushrooms relationships with the trees. Holy, it's so phenomenal. It is sacred. This is how I feel when I learn these things, and I know we are capable and all we have to do is be in a better state. And that stuff comes naturally. It's like mothering, you know, mothering comes so naturally. I'm not saying we don't make mistakes. Of course we do. But the intention and desire to be nurturing is there. It's undeniable. You know, in fact, I think if we followed that, those natural things that feel good and that are good, I think it leads to great places. And if we made space for that and we're okay with that, we would be a lot better off. God knows, you know, the way that we rear our children, I think that a lot of change can take place there that can have a tremendous impact on our society.
Respect for the mothers. Let's start there.
Including Mother Ayahuasca. You know, but
all of the mothers, Mother Earth, the mothers raising children. Yeah.
Respect for ourselves. And when we raise children, we raise boys and girls who are going to be men and women in this world. That's big. It has a big impact. So thank God for the medicines that are helping us through these times, for sure. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share your information, where you can be reached, websites, projects.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for this conversation. I get so much out of speaking with you. This has been joyful.
Oh, thank you. I enjoy it just as much as you do. Trust me.
So to reach me, my private practice is called Bold Embrace. It's boldembrace.org. And I have a small team of very talented individuals that offer everything from counseling and psychotherapy to individualized and intensive retreats to in-home psychedelic journeys to tantra education, couples workshops, pathways for ethically non-monogamous folks, spiritual counseling, all that kind of good stuff, as well as corporate work, helping corporations kind of do culture shift and bring some of these concepts in. And Voice for Hope is launching, hopefully it'll be launched by the time you air this podcast, with our first Bernardino Sabina ceremony videos and interviews, and later we'll be adding elders probably each month for a while. That is voiceforhope.world, and you can join the Ancestral Wisdoms Council there. There's lots of ways to get involved. If you benefited from a certain medicine or tradition and you want to make a donation to one of the elders or communities that are holding that lineage and protecting those medicines, you can do that. If you're a retreat leader or a psychedelic therapist or clinician, facilitator and you want to have your events blessed by one of our elders and lineages, we have a program for making a donation directly to them and receiving a basket of tools and to benefit your project, your retreat. Lots of ways to get involved there. Boldembrace.org is mine, and voiceforhope.world is the Ancestral Archives Project.
And your email, did you want to give that out?
Yeah, my email is Lori, L-O-R-I, at boldembrace.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all that you're doing, Rebecca. People need integration work, and yours is just so beautiful and needed. So I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Ayahuasca Talks. Please visit RebeccaHayden.com for more ayahuasca integration content and for information about working with me and using hypnosis as an empowering integration tool.